Welcome once again to the Great British Mickey Waffle. I'm John, and we have the pleasure of sharing a waffle today with someone who's become a friend of the show and has so much to share with us too. But before I introduce them, let's start by introducing my fellow presenters for today's waffle. We've got Claire.
Evening. How are you today? Are you okay?
I'm good, thanks, Claire. Are you?
I think so. I'm getting ready for a vacation. There's lots to do, but I'm excited.
Well, that's good. Vacation to places we don't want to go, but hey.
Yeah, not to where I want to go, but it's still not here. Still time off.
Exactly. And I've also got Ben and Becca. Hey guys, you all right?
Hi, John.
Yeah, hello. Yeah. We're all right.
Yeah, good. How are you?
I think.
All right. Enjoying the summer?
I've got a drink, so I'm good.
So have there I.
Go. That's what we want.
Yeah. And I've gone boring with water.
We'll go with the flow. That's exactly what we do.
Keeping hydrated.
So, can I just introduce our very, very special guest for this Share a Waffle show? And I know some of the Claire and Ben I've known from Hearing the Magic and the After Hours and WDW radio communities, but it's someone we've wanted to get on our show for quite some time. So a massive welcome to Lisa DeNoto Glasner.
Thank you so much for having me.
It's great having you on. I was going to say, if I run down all of the list, associated interests and things like that as an intro, I'll probably spoil the entire show. So I'm not going to do that just yet, but it's lovely having you on the show, Lisa. And thank you so much for joining us.
Well, it's a pleasure. Thank you so much. It's Friday. It's early Friday here. I'm feeling the Friday evening vibes.
Excellent. That's always a good thing. And if anyone's listening on a Tuesday, it's even better because I get that Friday feeling too. You see, that's what I really like about it.
Yeah, I'm definitely getting like the Friday evening
vibes. Yeah. Oh, excellent. So, first of all, we're just going to ask you some of the questions that have become synonymous with the Great British Mickey Waffle and all the guests that we've shared a waffle with. It's quick fire. So, go with the heart, share your thoughts, and just see what actually comes from the head and out of the mouth. And we won't judge on it at all, promise.
You will. I'm so bad at rapid fire questions, but I'm ready. Hit me.
take your time. If you want to explain your answer, you're more than welcome because it's always a nice one. So are you ready? Question one. What's your favorite park?
My favorite park is Epcot. I like to say Epcot is my heart park. It's kind of like the park. When we were thinking about making the move down here, I feel like the ability to pop into Epcot as a regular part of my day was like 99% of my motivation for wanting to be local to Disney. I will say that Animal Kingdom has really risen on my list in recent years, months, whatever. And it's frequently, even with my kids, like the park that I pop into a lot just for a short time. That being said, I'm true to Epcot, and it'll always be my heart park.
Yeah. Brilliant. Question two. Which ride or attraction do you hate?
That's really easy for me. So I can't ride Mission Space. And it's not because of the motion sickness. It's because I'm slightly claustrophobic, but it triggers me like in the worst way. I remember like I rode it one time. And I was with my mother and we got into the car or whatever you call it, the capsule. And we sat back and my mom looked at me and she's like, are you sure you're going to be okay? Because we were like pulled the harness down. And I was like, yeah, I think I'm going to be fine. So it's not like, and all of a sudden the like doors latch shut and then the wall comes to your face. I mean, if you're not claustrophobic, it probably wouldn't faze you in the slightest. But for me, like I spent half the ride kicking the door and the last half of the ride doing breathing exercises.
Oh, no.
And I never did it again, which is a shame because it's a cool concept, but I just can't take the.
Yeah, it's a ride that I've not done because of sort of that reason. I get a little bit claustrophobic, so it's just like, no, I'd rather skip it.
Yeah, it's
not,
like,
not ruin the day.
Like how it happens, like that it happens in stages, I think. Like you kind of brace yourself and that door closes and then all of a sudden the wall comes forward. And I think it's just the It wasn't
one too many. One too many.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, question three. What is your most overrated snack?
Most overrated snack. That's a good question. I feel like one thing I say, probably a Mickey bar.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like all it's got going for it is like that it's shaped like Mickey, you know, like it's otherwise not.
Yeah.
Like Mickey waffles do actually taste better than regular waffles, in my humble opinion.
But
the Mickey bar, yeah, I think that's my most overrated. Because everything else, like the pretzel, like I feel like I can hang with a pretzel all the time. Like the turkey leg serves its purpose. Yeah, I'm going to go with the Mickey bar.
We could have a bonus question there. It's like the purpose of a turkey leg.
Yeah, that's a whole other. That's a whole different show.
That's a whole show all of its own, isn't it? Let's move on.
Question number four. Favorite transportation mode in Walt Disney World?
Oh, that's such a good question. These days, I would say the Skyliner. I love the Skyliner. It was really nice. I mean, the bad stuff about COVID aside, that when they were giving you like a whole car to yourself, that was really nice. But even, you know, even if you're not alone in there, it's really big. I love the views. I love the theming that it's added to areas that didn't have theming before. So like you can be on the main road and look overhead and you see the characters going by. I find myself visiting places. Like the other day we went into Epcot, it was super, super crowded. So we basically walked straight through the park, hopped on Skyliner, and we ended up at Bar Riva at Riviera. So it's just kind of like opened up a new like range of options when you're in different places. Yeah,
it doesn't take too long to get from one place to another with a Skyliner.
No, it's pretty quick. I mean, it's not flying across, you know, but I'd say it's a few minutes. It's not like an amount of time that is inconvenient at all. And other than like right at maybe at park closing at International Gateway when they build up a line, it's usually not too bad as far as waits are concerned. So yeah, I like it a lot.
So tell us, what's your favorite table service restaurant?
My favorite table service. These are tough. So my real favorite table service is not reopened yet, and I'm hoping that it will reopen. And it's a random answer, but Takumite, which is the, I don't know if any of you had the chance to go. It's the a very, very nice restaurant that opened in the Japan Pavilion very quietly. Like it's on the lower level. You kind of have to know it's there. It's next to Mitsukoshi, like down there. You have to know it's there. And it has kind of like a, when you're in there, it feels very insulated. Like we ate there one night and Illuminations was happening outside, rest in peace. And you didn't even know it was happening. And the food is just insane. Like I've been to Victoria and Albert's and I think the food at Takumite is better. Just my humble opinion. And B&A is amazing.
I think that's quite a popular opinion that as well, isn't it?
Just hope it reopens, to be honest with you, because there's just been no mention of it in any of the reopening conversations yet, so don't know when it will reopen.
Yeah,
I'd like to be able to try it.
It's wonderful. And I think like it relies on international cast quite a bit. I think you need that like for the experience, so hopefully that's, you know, as that opens up more, we'll be able to return to those experiences.
It's strange because it gets such amazing reviews from so many people, and yet it's still considered that little hidden gem within Epcot as well. And it's kind of a secret messaging service that goes around where those who've enjoyed it don't like to tell anybody else that actually this is there. So like, keep it to yourself. Yeah,
I'd love to see them get more traffic. Like you really do have to know it's there, which is kind of the what's so special about it. But I think it's hard for them because it's in the park, and it's, you know, to have that upscale dining experience and like kind of be, feel like you don't really need to be dressed for it any more than you need to be dressed for any other, you know, signature restaurant at Disney. But you know, to be kind of out and about in Epcot and then happen to an experience like that. I don't know. I can see how it would be hard for people who are just here on vacation and like not, you know, not regulars here or locals. But yeah, like from a foodie perspective, I think it's the best food on property.
That's a good recommendation.
Certainly is, isn't it?
So the next question, a resort that you haven't stayed at, but want to more than anything else on earth.
Any resort in Tokyo or Shanghai. I don't even know what the resorts are, but that's what my answer is going to be. I've stayed in most.
What a great answer.
Yeah, I'm not going to be picky. You can put me up at Red Roof Inn across the street. That's my resort. That's my dream resort.
Question 7, what's your favorite car park?
My favorite what? I'm sorry.
Your favorite car park.
My favorite car park? Is that like
parking lot?
Parking lot.
UK we call it car park.
Okay. Okay,
you are the only person who's gone, what?
Yeah. Well, then it's me, not you, certainly. I'm sorry. So my favorite lot. The water park lots, because you just park and then you walk in. There's no like hassle to them. Like I love going to Typhoon Lagoon because Animal Kingdom actually is up there on that too, because usually you get that peacock area where you just kind of swing in. Yeah, I'm gonna say the water park. The water park parks, because you just park your car, you hop in, and there's not even like a security area to go through.
And you don't have to pay. That's
also
true. Part of any part of Disney park when you don't have to pay.
Yeah, so as an AP holder, you don't have to pay to park, but even that, like just removing that step of driving through the tolls and then going through security, it's such an easy like park and hop in. So I miss Typhoon Lagoon. I'm hoping it opens again soon.
So talking of water parks, and I think you might have already answered this, but which is your favorite? Typhoon Lagoon, Blizzard Beach, or Volcano Bay?
Not Volcano Bay. I do enjoy Universal on it for what it is. Not Volcano Bay. I love Typhoon Lagoon. I just feel like it's so chill. It's like such a relaxed experience. Like Blizzard Beach, I feel like is more about like the crazy water slides and like activities and stuff. And I know like a lot of people love Blizzard Beach to hang out and say that they have a good kiddie area, but I barely ever go to Blizzard Beach ever. We love Typhoon Lagoon. Like, it's just like, it feels like there's like sandy beaches and like the music that they play and like the little float.
Lazy River?
Lazy River. I'm sorry. Yeah, the Lazy River, like, it's just so relaxing. Like, I purchased a waterproof Kindle, you know, the little, like, Amazon reading device for the sole purpose of the Typhoon Lagoon Lazy River.
That's brilliant.
Like, I'm going to take my work, and like, reading I have to do, and I'm going to lay in the Lazy River and just read my Kindle, my waterproof Kindle. So.
Sounds ideal.
That does sound good.
I think we've got a lot of people just scrambling for a bit of paper and a pen, including me. Just like planning folder, waterproof Kindle. I'll write that one down. I'll have that there.
It's sort of a Typhoon Lagoon later in the year. How everyone's going to be in Lazy River with a Kindle.
I am logging that idea for future birthday and Christmas presents for people. Yeah. That's a great plan.
It's money well spent, I promise.
I'd never thought about it until then. I think that's a wonderful idea.
Yeah, like you can literally just spend the day in the Lazy River with a book and like not worry about the waterfalls or anything. It's the best.
Yeah. Oh, quality. Right. Next question. Galaxy's Edge or Diagon Alley?
Where are Diagon Alley?
I knew you were going to say that. In that place that shall not be named.
I do love Harry Potter, so I enjoy. We have passes for Universal. I don't go as often, but like my kids love Harry Potter and I love Harry Potter, so it has a place. It has its place.
Next question. Early morning or late night park visit?
Late night all day. or all night. Definitely late night. I'm a night owl, so much more than an early bird. I always feel good about getting to the park early and like you really can get a lot done. But like for me, it's all about like shutting down the park, those like park photography. So like the stuff that you can get when they're empty late at night, you know, whether it's an empty Main Street pic or just like a peaceful shot in Epcot.
Absolutely.
It's so special. Like the views at night are just so, so great. And now we've got fireworks back. So definitely late night.
Something special for getting that Main Street picture with no one in it.
Yeah, it was amazing. Yeah, amazing.
Okay. Question 11, keep the magic or backstage detail?
Depends on your age. You know, I think there's a reason they only do keys for the kingdom. Keys to the kingdom, like for, what is it, 18 and up, 16 and up? I forget what the age is, but definitely. I think part of the magic to me is understanding, like, all the work that goes into it. But, like, for my kids, I, you know, don't want to take them into the utility doors, so.
Okay, next question. Favorite other podcaster or vlogger about Disney?
Well, Lou. I'm thinking like there's a different answer. No, Lou is my favorite person and also my favorite podcaster. So
I think 90% of the people that we've had on here have said Lou. Yeah. So
as they should.
I think including us as well.
Yeah, I think we all said that too.
Yeah,
he's the good. Podfather. I think that's it.
Yes, the podfather, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, he's the OG. He's a good person too. Yeah.
And do you know something? I think that's where so many people who, within lots and lots of different Disney communities, irrespective of it's US or the UK, actually the acknowledgement of how many years that Lou has actually been producing content, irrespective of, you know, whatever has gone on and whoever has come along the way. And that sort of that longevity, I think we're in show 600 and odd at the moment. And to actually be able to do that and to keep it as fresh and to keep it as just as entertaining as it was a way back when, it just must, you know, we really, I think we all need to just take a hat off to her and just understand of just what he puts himself through week after week, isn't it?
Yeah, he does so much more work than I think anybody, you know, realizes. Yeah. You know, I think we all have an inkling, but like the amount of work that goes into, you know, just how much he gives and does. Is pretty amazing. And yeah, like he paved the way. He's also just a cool guy. So
it's very genuine feel to his. Yeah, it's all very genuine feel. And I think that's something to aspire to.
Absolutely. Yeah. And it's a breath of fresh air. You know, there's so much ugly, you know, in social media and, even in like a Disney, like you would think, like I came into this space, you know, kind of late in the game because I was, you know, kind of in a different world for a while, you know, different career path, and coming into it all, like you just, it's just shocking, like what goes on. I think there was more infighting amongst the Disney, some of the Disney than like, you know, at my law firm.
It's crazy. It's always surprising, isn't it? When you just think that the whole premise of the being in a Disney space is about positivity and, you know, in having fun and enjoying that opportunity to talk about magic and what it brings us all. And, you know, I know that Lou coined the phrase choose the good, and so many people that don't, and it's so inspiring when actually there's a community of people who want to get together who have that approach. Yeah. So, you know, it's all good.
Remember why you do it and all that good stuff. So
I think I know the answer to this next question, and for everybody else, it's a very difficult one, but I don't think it is for yourself. On site or off site?
On site.
Yeah.
Yeah, without question. If you're visiting here, it's a fully immersive experience. You know, your vacation doesn't stop if you're on site. It's meant to be that way.
There's something about being in that Disney bubble that you just arrive, you've got.
Yeah. I mean, and it's just the theming runs through and through. And again, like, you know, I live here, so I'm not on site myself, and I'm fine, and I'm sure other people are too. But, you know, if you're planning a first trip or you really need a dose of Disney, you know, on site. I can appreciate staying off site sometimes if you're a frequent visitor or something like that. That just makes sense. But, you know, I think anybody who comes here regularly can acknowledge that the experience is meant to be.
I just find it intriguing that somebody who lives so close to Magic Kingdom would still like to stay on site. I think that's such a lovely way of looking at it.
Well, I'm thinking more like advice I would give to somebody who is visiting here. I'm certainly not complaining about my proximity to Magic Kingdom. I mean, if you can move here, then yes, do that.
that's the perfect option.
But that being said, you know, setting that aside as an option.
I think you're sharing a waffle with four people who would love that option. I think. Yep.
If the opportunity was there, we'd go for it. We'd
jump into the challenge.
What can I just ask? What about the new Star Wars hotel, Lisa? Would you go and have a staycation there? Would you, when it opens, will you go and?
Yes, very much.
You go and stay on site. You remortgage your house to be able to do it.
I have two little boys too, so obviously, you know, I will at some point take them. I'm sure, and I would love to take them. I'm sure it's going to cost. You know, I can't even imagine
obscene amounts of cash.
Yeah,
I think you kind of have to
think of it like a cruise, like you're paying for a cruise because it's like that fully immersive, like everything on ship, literally, you know, kind of experience. So, you know, but still, yeah, I would love to go there, and you know, I have two little boys, so like all the more, I can't wait. But you know, I'm kind of braced for the price tag, so we'll see.
Yeah, I think it's going to be quite weighty, unfortunately.
Yeah.
And then we have one more question, which is, we didn't start with this question when we started doing these carousel of questions with people, but it's become a bit of a bone of contention amongst the team. And so we now have added it to our list of quickfire questions. So which do you think is the better show in Animal Kingdom? Is it Finding Nemo the Musical or Festival of the Lion King?
There's no answer. There's no good answer. There's not. They're both so good and they're so different. You know, I don't have an answer. I mean, which one do I think is?
Which is your preference?
I personally do not, like, I literally don't have a preference. I literally don't have a preference. In fact, I usually, and like when I have people in town, we usually head to Lion King just because that's what people I think gravitate to. So like given my own, like, day alone in the park, I would probably hit Nemo because I feel like I'm taking people to Lion King more than I'm convincing them to go to Nemo. But yeah, Nemo's a Broadway level show. And like Go With The Flow is my number one song in any show in any park in all of Disney. Like I can sing that song alone in the car like all day. And it's on a lot of my running playlists and stuff too.
You've managed to get the perfect answer of ticking like everyone's box.
I know. Maybe we should stop asking that question now. Lisa has answered it correctly, and we should stop asking people now, because I think maybe that's a good place to leave it. Until this point, we sort of lost count, but we know it's about 50-50. So maybe that's the solution.
Okay. I mean, that's my honest answer. Like, that's my honest to God. Like, it's complete even keel to me, and they're very different shows.
They are very different.
So nice to see Lion King back. Just
yeah, and it was more like the full show than I expected it to be. Like I expected it to be sort of like the characters kind of like standing apart in that center area, like singing the songs. But it's really the whole show, except they pulled out like the Tumble Monkeys.
Yeah.
And the aerial performers don't do aerial. They just are on the ground. So
yeah, I'm trying to work out why they don't, because that's...
Well, I think he has to be very much in contact with her to like do the moves.
Okay.
I assume that's what it is. Because they are like, at this point, they are like relatively, they are distance. They're not like on each other. And like, I think he has to really like grip her and like move her around,
get hold
and, like,
of her,
get up in her face and stuff. So it's my favorite part of the show. And I used to joke that she had my dream job. Not that I could do her job.
Is it? That's your favorite bit.
Part of the show.
That's your favorite part of the show.
Yeah. The aerial performers are normally my favorite part.
I'll tell you what, Lisa, thank you. So many amazing answers. And that was only the get to know you bit. want to talk about you, and you know, and I think that's the other side to this is where do you start? You know, your actual. Well, tell you what. Where did your you describe yourself as being Disney obsessed? So, how and when did your love of Disney start?
So, I think for me, like growing up, we would just come here on family trips, and I wasn't like obsessed. We weren't like some like crazed Disney family or anything. And like when I went home, I was fine. Growing up, and so that was, you know, that was then, and I kind of went to college and law school and all that good stuff, and hadn't been here in a while. And after we lost my dad, we came down here on a family trip 6 months later, and like we landed and we stayed at Boardwalk that vacation. It was me, my mom, my husband, and our two kids. We were staying at Boardwalk. And I just remember like standing out on Boardwalk that first night that we were there, and like life had been so chaotic. And I just remember having this like moment on Boardwalk, and it wasn't about like Mickey Mouse or roller coasters or anything like that. It was just like this like feeling in the air here. And I just remember like breathing the air in on the Boardwalk. And it was like that perfect, like October night. Like it was kind of like room temperature with a breeze, and like everything smelled good. Speaking of smells. And I remember just like in that moment, just being like, yeah, this is my place. And out of that, as an adult, kind of just fell in love with, this place and this community, and like kind of the way Disney does things. So yeah, I was late to it, probably more so than most.
That intrigued me because, you know, in a way, I think you've been very open on your own sort of your own blog, etc., about that journey from sort of from being in law and actually giving your job up. And you know, and then moving down there, and you know, I think that must have been one of the biggest things, you know, certainly one of the biggest things where you take that leap of faith in your life, where you want to get your own life back, you want to actually sort of connect with yourself completely, and to do it the way you have, you know, I think is absolutely incredible, and you know, it does take a lot of courage, you know. So was it the Disney part that actually pushed you towards it, or was it the fact that you just desperately wanted to reclaim your life?
I mean, the latter. I, you know, Disney is kind of, none of this is about Mickey Mouse for me. You know, this just happens to be the place that vibes with us, you know, right now in our lives. Like, I love the parks. I love this community. I have, you know, family and friends that I share my life with down here. I get to watch my kids bike to school in January. Like, you know, and Disney is just, it's just smart, good. I love everything about it. And I love everything about living here. But this all came out of, you know, I was miserable in my work, and I had been in big law for, you know, more than a decade, and kind of, you know, very unhealthy just because of how much I was working and barely sleeping and all that good stuff. And, you know, I needed to get out. And like, I think it was more about just getting out and kind of reconnecting with what spoke to me, and what spoke to me happened to be, you know, this life. So, so it was steps, you know, it was like, I got out of what I was doing cause it was wrong, you know, with the intent of kind of rediscovering where I wanted to be, and then where I wanted to be ended up being here. So that's my best answer.
I think it's really exciting that you, you know, it's quite a leap of faith. It's quite a jump with a family and you know, your children, and to move so far away with, you know, almost an open-ended plan. There wasn't a, in 5 years I want to get to here, in 10 years I want to get to here. I'm not going because of something specific. It's just, it feels the right thing to do. You know, I think it is pretty special, and I'd love to be able to do that. I'm not at that point. I think we're all sitting here going, we're all in jobs where you go.
And like, don't think that I underestimate like how scary it is or how difficult it is. Like, I was in big law for like 12 or 13 years. Like, I paid my dues in that, you know, that life. And, you know, and And I didn't just like, you know, I have two children and like, you know, a husband, and I, you know, have this great job. It's not like I woke up one day and I was like, yeah, I'm kind of done with this. I'm going to like just go put notice in. Like I planned for a long time, like financially and emotionally. Yeah. And like, it was, point being like, yes, it's scary, but, and like, don't think I'm like, oh yeah, you should all just like drop your day job and like Disney World, 'cause it's so easy. It's not easy at all. But like, I don't regret it for a minute. I don't regret it for a minute, but I do like acknowledge that it's a hard thing to do.
If it was easy, we'd all be over there already.
Right. Yeah, I mean, how many other people are like that, you know? I mean, that was me for a long time too. Like I wanted to be here for years before we made the move. You know, so I was in, if you're like in that space where you're like really wanting to be here, but it's not possible yet, like I've been there too. I get it, it's hard.
I think it's quite interesting now because we're seeing more and more people moving, I think, at this point in time, maybe after the last year of upheaval and people being potentially being forced to work from home more frequently. Certainly, you know, over here in the UK, majority of the workforce who could work from home were working from home. Not everyone could, but the people who are office-based were then working from home. And I suppose that's opened up more doors for people who might want to relocate. And certainly we've seen, just talking through the community, a bit of a trawl of people moving from different areas of the US and appearing in Central Florida, which is, it's fantastic that something positive has come out of COVID and people's change to their working circumstances or the ability to think creatively about how they solve those issues which are stopping them from following that path that they want to take. So I think that maybe that's a step that others are thinking more seriously about now, because we, you know, we all have that conversation in our head which is like, I'd like to move to Disney.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think so many people have realized that they can work from home, and like so many employers have realized that it's feasible too, and they save all this money by not having to have the office space for people. You know, and now all of a sudden, like, yeah, you can do your regular job and live in Disney World or wherever it is that you want to be. So yeah, I totally agree with that. I think like it's been happening for years now. And like in this past like year or two, like you said, like if anything good has come out of all this, I think one of the things is that we've realized like that we're more portable than we thought we were.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely.
I'm just going back to your own circumstances, because, you know, you were talking about the 2016-17. So, you know, this is way beyond any of these thoughts where, you know, where Claire's saying about where people are getting rather excited about getting out of the office now. But the bravery that you've actually shown at that particular point. And I think that's what must sort of hit home to people who are listening, is the fact that it doesn't matter what job you're in, you can do something about it. You can actually change. You can actually put a full stop to it and move on. And life still carries on. It's not a case of, you know, you're having to, I'm trying to think the best way of saying it. You're not sort of living to work. You know, you need to just have work in order to enjoy life to the full. And I think certainly for myself, that's something very personal to me, that, you know, it resonates massively, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, you don't, especially like law was such a great example of all of it, because it's such I use the phrase culture of misery a lot. And that's literally a phrase that you use, like when you're in big law, is that you are subscribed to this culture of misery. And like, it's so crazy, like from the outside to talk about that, but it's like, you're surrounded by all these people who are living the same life as you. And like, you know, you have a certain gift for a certain career, you're doing well in your career, and you feel like you kind of owe the world, like your unhappiness or your lack of satisfaction, because you know, you've got the skill in a certain career that like doesn't make you happy, or, you know, and like, you're just surrounded by people who are dealing with the same difficulties, you know, as you are. And at a certain point, you just have to take a step back and like, you know, life is short. Like, I will always be a hard worker. Like, I am a type A. Like, you can move me to Disney World or a beach or wherever you move me, I will have a full to-do list, and I'll be stressed out about it. Like, I will create, I'll create my own stress and work. It's just who I am. Like, so whether I'm in Disney World or in New York City, you know, that's who I am. And that being said, like, none of us like owe our unhappiness to anyone. And I think that was like with losing my dad and kind of coming to grips with a lot of kind of big changes in my life, I think I kind of was able to take a step back and just say, you know what, like, this doesn't have to be my life. Like,
yeah,
it doesn't make me happy. Like, and it's nobody's affected by this, but like me and my husband and my kids, like nobody else is going to be up at night worrying about my decisions. So yeah, it was tough. And I remember like when I spoke to the partnership, when I was putting in my notice, like we argued for like 4 hours. And they just kept telling me I was going to be miserable, and you know, they were good arguers. But, you know, but
that's
I held my
job. They were lawyers.
Yeah, they were great at what they did. They were great at what they did, and they were good people. They just, you know, I just didn't want to work there. So, yeah. So, yeah. Thank you for that. I appreciate that so much. And I feel like I hope that, and I know, like a lot of people who read my blog, for example, like read it because they love Disney World, but a lot of people who read my blog don't really care about Disney World, and they're just kind of curious about like the crazy person who left Big Law and moved to Central Florida and covers Disney for a living, in part. So yeah, so thank you for that. That means a lot.
I think it's we're all just sort of we don't like change, and I think we just sort of sometimes change happens and you just have to embrace it and just see what's around the corner, because sometimes if you get stuck doing the same thing day in day out, you don't know whether you're happy or not. You just sometimes got to take that leap of faith and just you just take that chance.
Yeah, I mean, it's physics, right? It's like an object in motion will stay in motion in the same direction unless acted on by like a force from the out. You know, I forget the exact phraseology. I'm sure one of you knows it better than I do. But you know, for me, it was the death of my dad. Like it was a horrible, nightmarish. He had acute leukemia, like 10 months of chaos and horrible. That being said, like it's like going through something like that is just such a wake-up call about like how short life is, and like that there's problems that are much bigger than the ones that you're making in your own head. And I tell the story a lot. You may or may not know, but I started distance running when my dad was sick. And then after we lost him, I kept distance running, and it was kind of the mental clarity that I was getting from that too that helped a lot with, you know, getting my head straight to make the changes that we're talking about, like leaving the job, moving here, that stuff. So
I think it's interesting because, you know, in my mind, you have moments in your life which give you an opportunity for reflection and really review of where you are, but they don't come frequently. They're quite sporadic, and you have to be in a place to be able to go, yeah, actually that's my moment to really think about what I do next. It's that fork in the road, you know, and they don't happen every week, every month, every year. There are sentient moments in your life that give you that chance to go, well, let's just think about this for a moment and make a decision. And the decision might be to carry on doing the same, but it might be actually to go, well, this isn't right now. This something has changed. My life has changed. I've changed. The people around me have changed for whatever reason. Mm-hmm. And then to use that as a catalyst to make a different decision that feels more appropriate in that time for whatever that might be, whether that be job, family, location. I think it's the skill is being able to really harness that moment of reflection and do something positive with it, because it can go both ways at all times. So, yeah, I think that's the bit that we recognise when we look at your journey and your story and the things that you've said in your blog, that actually you've been able to use that moment to reflect and to think and then to make a decision that's a positive decision at the end of it. So, yeah, it's intriguing and also quite inspirational.
Thank you. That's beautiful. And very like a very nuanced catch of things. And yeah, I think it's amazing like how many big things in your life can you like trace back to like that one little moment where you did A instead of B. Kind of makes you wonder like how many other little moments there are that you don't catch along the way. just being kind of tuned in and open heart, open mind, and you know, if you're joyful in what you're doing and you feel fulfilled when you put your head on the pillow at night, then like that's your sign that you're doing the right thing. But if you're not, then you know, maybe you need to kind of open up to what the other possibilities are, and like that can be scary too. Like when I was my husband used to when I was kind of stuck in my job just because primary breadwinner and like, you know, when you're kind of in that job, you don't feel like don't feel like you have a choice. Where he used to say, well, you know, when you're able to leave, like when we can, you know, get you out of this particular line of you know, work, what's your dream? Like, what do you want to do? And I, God bless him, like, he was saying all the right things. But I remember just getting so aggravated with him and saying, like, I can't go there in my head right now. Like, that doesn't feel safe. Mm-hmm. Like, for me, I can't, like, if I know I have to be, like, on the straight and narrow and, like, doing something that I don't necessarily, like, want to be doing, like, to me, daydreaming is dangerous. Like, I would rather just, like, put the blinders on, get the one I need to get done. And, like, you do that. And I feel like so many of us do that, though, like, in our day-to-day lives, because we're not happy with what we're doing, but we don't feel like changing, right? And so you put your, like, blinders on, and then, like, all of a sudden 5-10 years have gone by, and, like, you've kind of forgotten how to look beyond them. And that's kind of the conversation I was having with my husband. I was like, I can't, I don't even know what's out there anymore. Like, I've been kind of like this for so long that, and I used to say to him, like, what I really would like is just when I do leave this job, just to have like 6 months to kind of just reconnect and detox from like what I associate with work and all that stuff. You know, that was many years ago now that I asked for those 6 months, but I knew I just needed like just like the mental space to kind of start to feel safe breaking those walls down again. I don't know. It's we play mental games with ourselves. So anyway, thank you for those kind words and that you caught those things. That's really nice.
Yeah. So I'm going to go back to something that you were talking about a moment ago that makes you really happy. I would absolutely love it to make me happy, but I have never, ever, ever in my life been able to achieve it. And that is running. So Lisa, I love your playlists. I always listen to your running playlists. I think they're fantastic. I subscribe to them and they pop up on my Spotify and they tell me there's a new one. And I listen to it and go, I would love to be running while I do this.
I'm a good running fan.
I'm not, just to let you know, no secrets. I don't run while I'm listening to them. I quite often I'm working while I'm listening to them. But how did you mentioned that you got into running when your father was ill and you've carried on with that. Now, you run a lot from what I can see. How do you find the time with a young family and, you know, all the other amazing things that you're doing in your life and you never seem to stop? How do you find the time to carve out to run? Is that the time where you think? Is that the time where you decompress? When do you do it? How many hours are in your day?
Unfortunately, only 24. But no, so as far as the running goes, like I do try to run 5 kilometers every day. That's kind of my baseline. And that takes me about 30 minutes. And you have to kind of build in like the getting ready and the getting not ready and like the shower and all that stuff. So like, you know, it's an hour of my day or whatever. That being said, like I try really, really hard to wake up earlier than my kids and just knock it out. That way it's done. I go into the day clear headed. You know, I'm not taking away from my time with my kids or my work time. That being said, like, if it doesn't happen in the morning, then I try to just get out later in the day and get it done. That being said, I feel like without question, I get more time, and this isn't me just talking, you know, whatever. I literally think I get more time out of my day by taking that time to run because I'm more clear-headed. It's all my brainstorming time. Like any idea I come up with is always running because your mind's not doing anything, but your body is. So it's like the perfect time to like percolate. Like even if you have music going, like I still feel like I come up with all my good ideas while I'm running. So like I've come up with all my good ideas. I'm way more clear-headed. It wakes me up for the day. So I feel like whatever like 30, 45, 60 minutes I take out of my day to get that done, like I'm getting it back in spades easily with running. So yeah, and like you said, so growing up, like I've always been like kind of a health nut, but I was never a runner. Like I might run for a second, like to warm up for a weight workout or something. And I've always been like, I've always been in sort of really intense work environments. And so I've always had like the tools that I use to get me through the day, whether it's like meditating or drinking a lot of water or eating perfectly or, you know, all these different tools that you get for, you know, what foods you eat and all that good stuff for, you know, how to get through like intense situations where there's a lot of demand on like your mental and physical. And so when my dad got sick, I was trying all my tools and none of them were working. Like I couldn't meditate to save. When my dad was sick, like I couldn't sit with my, I couldn't do that. Like I've always been like nobody's good at meditating. Like, if you say you're good at meditating, you don't really do it. But like, I've always been like very like good in my practice and like seen the benefits of meditating. When my dad was sick, like I could not sit still with my thoughts. No. So I just started running. Like I said, I used to like, I would occasionally like do like a quick run on a treadmill to like work out before workout at the gym or whatever. And those runs like started to, and I just started running. And it just became my meditation because like I was able to do all that. And that's what I was talking about now, like what it does. Like it became like my way of getting all the like processing done and the ick out because I was doing something with my body, but like my head was still like kind of in that state. Yeah. So it became my like substitute for meditation when my dad got sick. And then, like I said, I kept doing it. And that's why I think, I mean, to today, like to this day, it's easily I get more even time out of my day if I do run than if I don't. So,
and what would your advice be to someone who likes listening to a running playlist but doesn't like running?
If you really don't want to run, I would recommend that you pour yourself a glass of wine and enjoy the music.
That is the answer that Claire was looking for.
If you want to run, just know that like you don't have to go run 6 miles. Like you can literally like jog for 30 seconds. And then you went for a run, like you'll feel it. Like you'll feel that like your blood start to move. And there's great apps that are like Couch to 5K that kind of take you through that. But no, I mean like go in your front yard and like run for 60 seconds and then take a walk. And then maybe tomorrow your run will be 63 seconds and you'll walk the rest of it. And maybe the day after that, you'll run for 70 seconds. Like you're still going to be that much further in 2 months than you are right now if you're slowly building. So yeah. So like, if you don't want to run, then don't run. But like, if you do want to run, just know that like, you don't have to go run a marathon. Like you'll get all the benefits of running if you don't usually run by like jogging down your sidewalk for 60 seconds. That's it.
I think I always find it quite intimidating just thinking about it because you see people, there are two groups of people that I see. There are people who are runners who do it and they're very good at it and they don't seem to get out of breath and they can run indefinitely and look like a gazelle. And then there are people who don't run at all.
There's people like me.
And I'm not going to say which camp I fall into. I do other sports.
We've all got an inkling.
You know, I'm a black belt in karate. I'm not completely incapable of moving. But I just... I'd love to be the first person, but I can't. I just can't get around my head around the fact that it's a slow burn. I want to be good at it now. And I think that's the difficult bit for me is that I can't do that slow build up.
But that's what I love about running is that like, it's totally just you. Like anybody who's out there on the course, like on a long run, on a long race, isn't competing against the people that are running next to you. You're in your own head. You know, and if you're going slower because you need to go slower or you feel really good, so you're going to go a little bit faster. If you feel a little sick today, so you're going to cut your run a little short or you're feeling great today, so you want to take it a little longer. It's all just you. So if your pace is a 16-minute mile or your pace is a 6-minute mile, like you're still getting all the same benefits. Like, in fact, you're getting them kind of more in the beginning because you're noticing all that stuff more. Like later, it's not like you're going to go for a run and be like, oh my God, I feel the best I've ever felt in my life. But like those first few are kind of like that. So again, if you're not a runner, that's all cool. but I do think like it's just good for the soul.
And it's trying not to compare yourself to, you just, like you say, you just focus on yourself. You focus on your progress.
It's just you out there. It's not like, oh my gosh, this Olympian like looks so pretty on the course and I don't. Like you're just in your own head and like maybe you go run for 5 minutes. And like, you know, tomorrow you'll, and it's so measurable. That's what I like about it. It's like, if you're brand new to running and like, you're like, all right, I'm going to go for a run. And then like 60 seconds later, you're like, oh my God, I feel like my lungs are going to like collapse. You know, if you keep doing that, like 2 weeks from now, you can literally look at your watch and say it was 75 seconds before that happened today. You know, so it's like so tangible. But
I think we need to contract Lisa as the Great British Mickey Waffle running coach and get us all running.
Yeah.
Because I'm like you, Claire. I'd love to be able to run. I just
think it looks amazing, and everyone I've spoken to who runs says how therapeutic it is, and how and they're all people who didn't run. My friends who now run, and they hated running, and now they run, and they love it. And they listen to this stuff going on in their head, and they come away just like Lisa said. They come away with a really productive day when they've had an hour run in the morning, and it's so positive. Yeah. And I go, yes, I'm going to do it. And I download the Couch to 5K app, and it sits. I've even chosen who's going to coach, and I'm just like, you know what?
And then it's 7 o'clock in the morning.
I'm already getting up at 5:30, and it's like, how can I squeeze this into my day? And you know, it's all excuses. Of course I could, but yeah, it's about that making that decision, finding that time.
Yeah, I think it's all about just developing the habit like anything else. Like you could say like, all right, for the next month, I actually host like Facebook groups that are 5K, 5K a day challenge groups. And like some people will commit to like a mile. Some people will commit to the 5K. Some people just commit to doing 30 minutes of kickboxing because that's what they do. But it's just like you make a promise to yourself, like every day this month, I'm going to run 1 mile, or I'm going to walk around my block this measurable distance. And you tick that box every day. And in part, it's just really good to like make a promise to yourself and keep it, because I feel like we break promises to ourselves all the time. So it's really cool to like go through that month and kind of see what you can do when you make a commitment to yourself. And also just like at the end of the month, like hopping out of bed and taking that run is going to be what feels natural, not like skipping the run. So again, like I'm not going to push running on anybody, but like I do think that people overthink it. Because once you start doing it, it's really just like a pair of sneakers and the street, and like that's all you really need.
Yeah, I've got a really good friend who runs, and he just tells, I say, I can't do it, and he says, you can, you walk, you just need to move them a bit quicker. So you know, that's his theory. I was like, okay, thanks for that.
Yeah, add a little bounce to your step.
Yeah, simple.
I was going to add as well, Lisa, I think for anybody who, you know, hopefully people are listening to this and are going to find out a little bit more about you, but head towards your blog, and you've got the Disney Running Trails, which is, you know, loads and loads of different Disney places. And it's a good read for me because it's like loads of different lovely pictures and the reading part of it. It's good. But what an inspirational part of actually going to different parts of Disney and actually enjoying just going for a run as well.
Yeah, so it's not something that was really readily out there. So since I'm local and it's what I do, it seemed like it made sense for me to produce kind of the Bible of where to run at Disney. And so that's kind of what I chopped away at over time. A lot of the resorts do have like marked like official running trails, but they never feel like they're natural tracks necessarily. And so what I do is I'll go to the resort, you know, put on my sneakers and music and whatever, and like literally just go and like just put map my run or like, you know, one of the like map the GPS things on, and I'll just go for like what feels like a natural run on the property, whether it's like to run around the water, whether it's, you know, running around the water at Caribbean Beach, or, you know, grabbing what little distance you can at the Contemporary and Bay Lake Tower, or, you know, doing the Grand Floridian Poly. Well, that's a bigger loop now. And kind of just do what feels like a natural run to see how long it is and like kind of what. So that's been fun to put together. And yeah, they're meant to as much be like a running trail guide as like if you want to go for a walk somewhere interesting at Disney, or if you just kind of see spots, like details around the resorts, like you said, like I'll post the pictures, you know, that you see along the way. So they're fun. They're really fun. And I know they've been useful to people.
After we've not yet gone running on a holiday.
No. I was about to say that, Ben, as well. It doesn't feature highly, does it, when we go on vacation? It's just like, it's not going to have that start to the day.
But maybe it's an excuse to have extra Dole Whip.
We always bring our gym kit thinking, we'll use one of the gyms on site one day. We never do.
No.
I don't know why we bother, to be honest.
But then you're walking 10K around the parks that you might not do normally anyway. Yeah. So you've got a pedometer running and you're like, wow, why can I do that when I'm in Disney, but not any other time?
Yeah, the miles definitely don't rack up as hard as at Disney as they do anywhere else.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would not go on a Disney vacation necessarily and spend time in the gym either. So just to be clear.
Yeah, we've got our Disney cruise coming up in September, and it's
that's exciting.
And it's just like, we can, with COVID and everything, it's about you have to book everything. So it's like, there's a slot for the gym open. I'm going, no, I'm not going to do that. I'd much rather go in a lounge and have a drink than be on a cruise. Even though it's probably very nice.
But some are nice gyms, but I'm still not doing
it.
They are nice, but yeah, there's plenty of nice parts on the ship to enjoy.
Yeah.
I was also, I think, again, they're just pushing people towards, was it thecastlerun.com is your blog? But it talks about the running. It does have all those lovely routes. Do go and have a look. It talks about your love of Disney. And also the category there is, the last category, is it just talks about life. And it's not just your life. It's lots and lots of other different people as well. And, you know, obviously just doing a bit of research for this show and reading some of that, it becomes quite addictive. Because you start reading about other people, and it is an absolutely amazing blog. So, you know, I'm not gonna keep picking different pieces of it out. But if people are interested, that part of your blog is so powerful. It really is.
Thank you. Yeah, I try to break it down because people come to the blog, like I was saying before, for different reasons. So, if you go to it's thecastlerun.com, which you've said as well. Thank you. And then on that main page, there's the header, which just has like whatever's the latest. And then below that, you'll see there's a section, like you said, for Disney, a section for running, and a section just for life in general, because I kind of want, you know, if somebody reads my blog just for like the Disney stuff, then I don't want to shove running down their throat or, you know, life lessons, God forbid. So I try to break it down like that. And there's obviously a ton of overlap, but you can kind of don't feel like if you're not a runner that I don't have anything to say. I always have something to say.
And I actually love the fact that it's, I was going to say, John, I love the fact that it's a blog, that it's still written word. Yeah. And that for me is so refreshing, because so many people in a variety of different social media spaces and things started with writing a blog and then have moved into vlogging and Insta. And I know you do, you know, your Instagram account is, there's lots of amazing photography that you put on there as well, but still to have that core written word to go through and to read and to digest, there's something really special about that. And I think people have moved away from it, sadly. And I know, John, you're a writer.
I'm a writer.
You put everything in words. I'm a grammar nerd, and I love all that. So it's just to have something that you can actually, it's tangible, it's touchable. You know, you can go back and you can reread it, and you hear the information coming through in a different way when you read it, rather than when someone's delivering it to camera in your face on YouTube. So I love the fact that it's still a blog and you haven't decided to change that. Please don't change that ever.
No, I mean, I'm a writer at heart. I think, you know, I always will be a writer. So that's like what feels most natural to me. Like if I have something I want to express or share, like written word is just what I gravitate to always. And I always say, like, I watch a ton of YouTube myself, but for me personally, like if I want to like relax and connect and like gather information, I'll go to a blog. If I just want something on, and just for me personally, like if I want something like on in the background while I'm working or, you know, doing something around the house or folding laundry or doing candles or whatever, like I'll put YouTube videos on. I'm not necessarily doing research on YouTube videos or like spending like focused time on them. Mm-hmm. And that's just me. I'll always do the written word. And like you said, I enjoy Instagram. I love photography. So I like that. And then I also have learned over time, like about, you know, using stories to connect with people, like just by talking, I think has been really valuable. So I try to like, you know, I enjoy Instagram for what it is, like I said, for the photography and also just for that chance to do kind of that short term, like that like short lived story format. So I'm trying to use everything that makes sense to use for me to connect. But yeah, for me, the blog is always the heart of it.
I think as well, and I think this for anybody listening, do go and check it out, because it's up to date, and you must spend a lot of time just making sure that, you know, it's everything that you put on there is recent. And that's one of the nicest things about it, because you know, you're not reading stuff from a couple of years ago. It's the here and now, and it's that to me is where it becomes completely relevant for everybody who wants to read it. And like I say, I'm not gonna pick out one particular part of it, because there are so many different stories that you've got, particularly in that live section, which is absolutely amazing. I've got to say, and. I do like, there's a couple of gags in there. I'll add this one. Was it the one that you've got with the picture of it? I used my stimulus check to buy chickens. I got my money for nothing and my chicks for free. And I just thought, that is what a lovely one to actually include as an excuse to sort of go to a dire straits on this, just something like that. It's just absolutely crazy. And I just love that. That's the joy of having a blog. You can just share something like that really appeals to you, and you know.
Sometimes it's something that's taken weeks to prepare, and sometimes it's something off the cuff that was just a thought that you just pop up there. So, like you said, it's the beauty of a blog.
That's just, I could keep talking about blogs all night.
We're not going to though, John. We're going to move on. I think the thing that we all want to talk about as well is something that costs us a fortune over here. How on earth did you get into Core Memory Candles? I love the name, number one, Inside Out, amazingly, and Core Memory Candles is a genius name.
Thank you.
But how did you decide that was something you were going to do? And how do you get to a point of identifying a new cat, a new smell, a new scent that you're going to produce? Is this your dog who's moving the table?
Get out from under my desk, and she literally moved the entire desk into my lap, and now she's like struggling. So late,
she's looking at you, going,
"Wait, she's gonna walk around. You'll see her. Hang on."
Oh,
Stella, you have completely disrupted the entire.
That's a horse. That's not a dog. So sweet.
All right, I'm slightly relocated, but that's
you're fine. We're all with you're fine.
Remind me of the question.
So let's talk candles. Oh, John, what's wrong?
You talk candles. Give me 2 seconds. You keep talking. I'll just put my mic on.
Okay. All right. So let's get started
with the candles.
Yeah, how did you decide that was something you were going to do? And when you are looking at introducing a new candle, how do you decide which one to go? Because so we've had a live Wednesday show where we talked about smells in Walt Disney World. There are so many outstanding things that smell beautiful, but also bring those memories to you. That that olfactory memory sense is so strong. How do you decide which one's next? Is it just peer pressure? People say, please make this, or is it?
Yeah, I mean, that's what I'm making them for, is for people. So it is largely just, I'll kind of just go out and say, like, you know, what do you want me to be working on right now? Do you want me to be working on, you know, Mickey pretzels, or do you want me to be working on like the, you know, Grandestino Tower? And I kind of know where to focus my energy based on what people want. And obviously, like, people are reaching out to me all the time. My short list already exists. Like, you know, that's what I made first. Pirates of the Caribbean, and, you know, the Spaceship Earth, and Living with the Land, and, you know, all the, like, you know, the Soarin' and all that good stuff. So, so people, you know, reach out to me and say, please, can you make blank? Like, I stayed there with my family and it means so much to me. And, you know, and if I get that same request a certain number of times, I'll kind of know that it needs to be moved up on the list. And there's, you know, there's certain things like that are kind of holiday influenced or that I just fall in love with personally. You know, when Riviera opened, like, that hit the top of my list immediately, just because it's such a beautiful scent. If you've been in the Riviera lobby, it's very specific and it's a really great smell. That's just more kind of what people want. Things kind of, you know, seeing things pop up in the parks that do have strong scent, you know, associated with them. That's what you want to run with. You know, as far as why I started making them, I mean, it's in part, it's just a lesson in what I was talking about before. Just like, you just have to kind of choose a thing and run with it and see how it goes. Like, for me, like, I wasn't, I love candles. I'm a huge smell person, and I'm very much into like the power of scent to transport you. Like before we lived here, I was always burning, you know, Disney-ish candles. Like I would be at some random store and find like a room spray that smelled like the Contemporary Lobby, and I'd be like, oh my gosh, like I need this. There's my dog.
I know that feeling.
Yeah.
And like just for me personally, I just wasn't finding what I wanted on the market. Like I tend to like to bring Disney into my house kind of subtly. Like I have, you know, patent drawings of, you know, different things for Disney over my television. I have like a watercolor of the boardwalk, and, you know, like subtle things in my home. So for me, I wanted a candle where like it was almost just my little secret that smelled like the lobby of the Contemporary. And otherwise it just looked like a beautiful candle. And like I said, like there's other candle companies out there, but like for me, it was, I just wasn't finding what I found, what I wanted on the market. So I started to work on it myself. And just kind of ran with it. And like, you know, I always say like, I will only do something for as long as it feels like it makes sense. And this makes sense. So it's doing really well. It's a beautiful way. I have found that it's a really beautiful way to bring in both my writing and my, you know, graphic design love and the scent stuff. Like it's a really good kind of amalgamation of everything that I enjoy doing, because if you've ever gotten a candle from me, you know, it comes with like a note that's sort of why this smell is so special. And I'm very deliberate in my design of the vessels and the labels and the boxes and how they're delivered and all that good stuff. So I have found that it's a really cool way to bring a lot of my interests into one thing. And that one thing seems to be something that's really serving my community, because it's something people need. Like I knew I needed something like this before I lived here. Like the scents of Disney were so important to bringing into my home. And there were certain days when I missed it so much here that like I couldn't burn the candle because it like broke my heart a little bit. That's how powerful smell is for me. So it just felt like a cool thing to pursue and figure out for myself, because I wasn't finding what I wanted on the market. And over time, I have realized that it's a really cool way to bring in so many things that I'm interested in doing into one product or one business.
Out of all of your candles, do you have a favorite scent?
It depends on the day. I think, you know, what is my most beautiful scent? In my opinion, probably Riviera. What is my most sort of classic, sort of on the nose Disney scent? Probably Ocean Flight, which is that beautiful ocean air scent that's on Soarin' and Flight of Passage and the Contemporary Lobby and Beach and Yacht Club. That's a classic, and Main Street is sort of a classic. You know, I'm probably most proud of the one I call Castillo del Moro, which is my Pirates of the Caribbean scent, because it was such a hard one to nail in a way that didn't stink. You know, yeah. We all love that pirate smell, but we don't necessarily like literally want it in our living rooms. So I was trying to like channel the vibe of it into like a beautiful smell, and the feedback I get on it is great. So like I think I'm most proud of that one, because it's challenging, because like pirate water is such a touchy thing for Disney people. Like you can't get that wrong.
It's just pure bromine, isn't it? And that's the thing, you can't create a candle that smells just of.
Right. So it's the bromine. And then now they do actually own Pirates. They pump in like when you're going through the fire, and like there's like burning rum, and there's different, there's like the gunpowder kind of scent. Yeah. So it's a complicated smell, but and like you said, like you can't like put bromine in a candle.
I don't think that would go well with anyone.
So yeah, I think I'm most proud of like that creation. And then what I reach for each day just kind of depends on my mood. I love warm pretzel dough. Warm pretzel dough literally smells like you're baking bread in your house.
Okay.
Like it's pretty intense. Like
if I'm making
you hungry bread.
And it doesn't smell like it's a, because I don't like food scents. It literally smells like you're baking. The warm pretzel dough. So
wow. And is it an exciting process to go through those different iterations of the scent? Because it must be at times frustrating where you think you've got it, and then you go, oh no, that didn't work. And then the next time you go, yeah, that, and then you've got it, and you clock it off, and you're like big tick and move on to the next one. But that process, that creative process, must be like a journey of discovery every time.
It's very cool. Like it's cool to like to do it myself. And then it's really, really cool to then like bring it to friends and like see if they agree or not. Like it's the cool. Like I remember like I had done the Grand and a couple of other things, and I brought them over to a friend's house, and I had them smell it, and she and her husband were both like, that's Grand Floridian. And I was like, yes, it's Grand Floridian. So yeah, it's very cool. It's the coolest thing, because I feel like it's such a subjective thing. Mm-hmm. You know, they always say, like, you know, your red might be different from somebody else's red. Like, we might just call it red, you know, and I feel the same way about scent sometimes. Like, so when I make a scent and then I show it to someone else and they also are able to come up with what it's channeling, it's so satisfying because it's like, it's out of my own head and into the world then. It's like a cool process.
It's very cool. And it's really exciting because we can get them over here in the UK now. It's not something that I've done personally yet, but you do now ship to the UK. So that's very exciting. So Core Memory Candles is something that we can access from over here now, which is great.
Yeah, I do sell them in the UK now, which has been so exciting. And I offer a flat, shipping is just expensive. It is what it is. And so I do offer a flat rate, and a lot of my customers who are wonderful, who buy from overseas or from, you know, up north or whatever, will kind of go in with family and just take advantage of the flat rate. And that way they're all just paying a portion of that. So shipping just is what it is. It's expensive. Yeah. It sucks for me as well. Believe me, I hate what I pay on shipping. But that's been a trick that I know, like in the UK or in Canada or some other places that I ship overseas, where I offer a flat rate, like people will go in with friends and just divide the shipping up amongst them.
I think it's on the cards. And
I was going to say that exactly.
I'm just thinking, Ben and Becca, they live about 20 minutes away from me. I'm just like going, shall we?
Shall we?
I think we might. Let's make a list.
Yeah, that would be great. That would be perfect.
I just love the sound of that was Afternoon Storm. To actually have a candle that replicates a Floridian afternoon. Summer rainstorm. That just, to me, that was just be something else. You know,
that's a really characteristic smell, isn't it? Because you know when the rain's coming.
Specific Florida smell that, like, that's because during the wet season, which we're in now, we get so much rain that the earth is just kind of like steaming up from below. Like you know, you're like at Disney in the parks and it rains really hard and then the sun comes back out and you can literally see the steam rising up off there's such a specific scent associated with that. And that was another one like that I created, or you formulated the scent for and started making the candles and shared them with people. And my friends were, you know, got it, you know, were in agreement immediately. And I didn't say, had to tell them what it was, they guessed. And I've gotten like the most beautiful, that particular smell, I think because it's such a like hallmark of every day when you're in the parks, it's not one that people buy all the time, but I feel like when people buy it, they connect emotionally with it so much. I remember one woman told me she let her older daughter smell it. She had gotten the Afternoon Storm candle and she said her daughter started to cry. And she said, Mom, that's not the smell of rain. That's the smell of rain on vacation. It's always so cool. Like when somebody, like when you make it, like you're just smelling it yourself, like anything, you know, and then you kind of like send it out into the world and hope it does well. And so when people connect with them, it's always really nice.
And I think that's where the name really connects with the product as well, you know, that they are core memories. They are things that we hold on to in head, in heart, with our families. So I think that the whole production of these incredible candles, I think you've done such an amazing job. I can't wait to get some.
Thank you. I can't wait. Thank you.
We'll have to stock up when we're over there in October.
Yeah, whoever's going first, go and bring us the extra suitcase.
Yeah, it was meant to be me, but it's not now. Well, we're over in October.
It's still you. It's still you by 2 days, isn't it?
Oh, okay.
There you go. See.
I'll take an extra. I'll take an empty suitcase, and we can just fill it.
Oh, definitely. Well, there's so many. Yeah, there's so many, and there's just like so many smells that you know that really do reflect on each of our trips, and that is where that whole sort of it's like that sort of scent memory, isn't it? It just sort of transports you back to a place and a time.
Yeah, so the neurology of scent is really fascinating. It's our most primal sense. And it actually, like, the reason that it's so powerful is that when your body processes scent, it actually bypasses all of the, like, logical parts of your brain, and it goes straight to your, like, core, like, your most primal.
Yeah.
And so, like, most of your scents kind of have to go through the filter of judgment before they reach the heart. And scent just, like, it just goes right there. So, like, it kind of, it and just goes straight to that primal spot. So the scent, scent is fascinating. It's very fascinating. And it's like I said, it's our most primal thing. So there's a reason why, like, smelling, you know, the lobby of the Contemporary or the burning Library of Alexandria and Spaceship Earth, like, yeah, transports you, because it's, and Disney knows, like, Disney uses those things very purposefully. So you're not crazy. Like, it's all, it's all purposeful.
Yeah. I'm intrigued by the carrot cake cookie one, which is just anything that could take me back to the writer's stop would be,
that's the one
highly that, welcomed.
That's, yeah, the one.
That's just, yeah, just sort of really sort of hits home and things like that. So
yeah, it's very much writer's stop.
On some of our recent shows, we've asked our guests to imagine you're hosting a dinner party. You have one guest of honor already assigned their seat, Mr. Walt Disney himself. You can invite five other people to enjoy the meal with you and him. These can be any character within the parks from any Disney film, from any Disney world, so MCU, Star Wars, Pixar, any cast member or Disney employee, dead or alive. Who are you inviting?
Five people.
They can be characters. So you can choose a character, an employee, an Imagineer, a cast member, board, anyone. Dead or alive.
So five people in addition to myself. So I would first say Bob Iger. Absolutely. I think, like, he was such a part of so much of the journey of the company, to say the least, in recent, you know, decades. And I think it would be just sort of fascinating to watch the two of them talk and get that update. And yeah, I don't have to explain why Bob's on the list. So Bob would be on the list. Kevin Feige, absolutely. In part just because I also would want him at the table. But again, just to kind of, like, give him, like, a view into all of the different things that are being done. So I'd say Kevin Feige, I would say Bob Iger. One of the cast member janitors who paints the water Mickeys and stuff on the street, because I feel like, I mean, it could be 1,000 cast members that I would choose for this role, but that just seems like a good example. Like, just showing Walt that, like, to this day, the cast members that are in the parks, even, you know, at any level, are performing that show like he intended it. So that would be my three. Richard Sherman, I would have back at the table for all the reasons. And my fifth would be Lou.
You're not the only person who said that either.
No, it's okay.
I just created his dream dinner, so I would not want to share it with him. So
yeah,
it'd be Walt and Kevin and the cast member, Kevin Feige and Luke.
As long as Kevin Feige can sort of spoil all the details on Loki, I'll be happy.
Just phase four and
that fourth. Oh my gosh, the last episode.
Yeah.
Wow.
Something else.
Yep.
So it's totally, that sounds like a great dinner. That sounds like a really good dinner, actually. I'll come and serve.
Yeah, I'm very proud of the table. I'm very excited about that.
It's a hard question to answer.
It's a hard question because five is a big number.
Yeah. And you don't want to leave anyone out, but equally, you know, having the opportunity.
I was like, I can't start naming family members because then all of a sudden all my slots are empty. I'm very happy with that list. Bob Iger, the cast member, Richard Sherman, Kevin Feige, and Lou.
Yeah.
I don't think you get a word in edgeways.
I was just back and watch everybody.
Yeah, that'd be good.
Sounds fun.
And I love the fact that you've included cast members as well, because I think that's the one part. Like,
If Walt's at the table, I feel like he deserves to see like the legacy and sort of like how even like how every cast member is still, you know, creating magic and opening the curtain to that show every morning. I think like would be really cool. I think that like that conversation, I think would be the one that was the coolest to watch. Like Walt talking to just an everyday cast member today.
Yeah.
And I think that's the magical part about it. And also looking at, you know, what cast members have been through over the past goodness knows how many months, and to see them returning to work and returning to the parks, and then to, you know, I know that you had the absolute privilege of going and watching their Happily Ever After when it first was reintroduced to the parks. And it's just like, it's that whole positivity and that whole part where cast members must have just been delighted to see the fireworks back. But how was it for you? What did you make of it?
It was amazing. I think, like, I remember being at Magic Kingdom. I was talking about this the other day. I remember being at Magic Kingdom the night that they closed back in March of 2020.
Yeah.
And, like, kind of listening to the whisperings and the rumors and, like, the CDC guidance that was coming out that day as we were in the park and being like, okay, maybe this is going to be, like, couple weeks, maybe this is kind of like somebody said 6 weeks. So we were like in the park that day, we watched the fireworks shoulder to shoulder because we really weren't in that mindset yet in Florida. And leaving that day, I remember like thinking like, oh, how long is this going to be? I think somebody said 472 days was the amount of time that we did not have fireworks for. So, you know, we talked about before how they're right kind of out my back door. So losing that part of my day has been hard. And it's such a symbol of like living here is seeing the fireworks every night or hearing the fireworks every night. So getting that back was a really big deal. So yeah, so I watched them from my house during the first test run. I went to California Grill with my kids for the second test run, and we watched them from the balcony up there. And then we were in the park yesterday, which was really amazing.
Oh, wow. That is just, you're making us very, very jealous.
Yeah.
Because I know quite a few of us stayed up very late when we were just watching the live stream.
It's not something I take for granted, like at all.
And I think watching the live stream,
the internet was alive.
So emotional. Yeah, it was.
It was very emotional.
But what an emotional evening, and to actually be there from that final night away back in what seems sort of forever and a day ago.
Do you know what got me, closing. John? What got me was the big cheer as they started. And there was everyone's like, there's this almighty noise of everyone, just explosion of joy that this was actually happening. And that must have been loud and, amazing. So
it was amazing to be there. Yeah.
We felt it from here, you know, 4,500 miles away. We felt it.
I'm sure. How could you not?
I think even on July the 1st podcast. And I'd put in the line of it. I felt like a big kid waiting for Christmas. And it was just cool. Such an exciting part of it. It really is.
Yeah, we purposefully went to the park earlier and just had like a park day, just so it would feel like the end of a regular park day instead of like that we just ran over for the fireworks. So I was there with Lou and some friends, and we did like pirates and we did people mover and what else we do? We did PhilharMagic and like just like kind of like stuff that was kind of classic and like Haunted Mansion and Jungle Cruise. We did all that stuff like during the day. And then so the fireworks kind of felt like the end of a park day, which was cool. Like I've missed, it was very different being in the parks like this last, since the reopening, without having like that grand finale of the night to look forward to. You know, like even if you were staying or you weren't staying, like just being in the park and knowing that there was going to be this end cap to the night of, you know, the show at Epcot or, you know, Magic Kingdom or Studios or whatever. So it's exciting. And then now we're getting a new show on the 1st. Mm-hmm. So two new shows.
Yeah.
So yeah, and we're excited by that. So Ben Becker and I, we're all there with our, well, I'm there with my family, and they're there at the end of October for a couple of weeks.
Cool.
So
good.
Looking forward to being able to see that. Can't and wait. Harmonious. Yes. We've got some plans.
The enchantment. The Magic Kingdom one.
Yeah. So we've got some plans as to how we might experience them. So yeah, we're just hoping it all comes off, and it's going to be an amazing, amazing time just to be back in. Hopefully, as long as the CDC say we can come, to be back there and back seeing our friends, and you know, for me, for my family, and you know, actually, it'd be great to be able to visit people and connect.
It's time. So, that's time for sure.
It is. Yeah. It is definitely time. It
would be about 2 years, I think.
It'll be over 2 years for Claire and
just almost exactly 2 years to the day
for us.
What a crazy couple of years, you know?
Yeah.
Right. I feel like 2020 just doesn't exist now. It's like,
it's like a blur. It's like a blur.
But you know,
I agree. Good riddance.
Onwards and upwards.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah, take one thing, Lisa. It's always quite nice to finish a show off with this. Is there anything you'd like to ask us? Because we kept firing the questions at you all night. Is there anything you'd really like to ask us?
So, I guess I'm just kind of generally interested in kind of overseas Disney fandom and like how it starts and like how you kind of satisfy that need, especially these days with not being able to travel. I'm in Central Florida experiencing this. And so I don't take that for granted in the slightest, but I also think it's really cool to see like how people bring Disney into their lives and how people fell in love with Disney, you know, when it probably wasn't shoved in your face every day as, you know, somebody in the UK or overseas. So I would love to hear about that.
Go on, Ben and Becca, you start this off.
Go on then.
All right, well, you start then.
I'd say that it's a difficult one, that trying to keep that Disney, especially during COVID and the pandemic, keeping that alive and just sort of having trips cancelled and knowing what's going to be around the corner. But having like Jason in here with the magic and lunch breaks was just like the break in the day. I was working from home, so it was like just that point in the day that I was able to see videos of Disney. We'd watched a few YouTube videos before of general stuff, but it was just everyone was showing the same thing of them in the parks, so it was quite nice to see those quiet spaces. Mm-hmm. And as you can see behind me, I've sort of taken up Disney Lego, so it's like
that's
that's all me.
That's amazing. Wow.
Yeah,
that's a commitment.
Yeah, it is very addictive.
It's an expensive commitment.
That castle was so expensive.
Yeah,
and then I always think like, what would I do with it when I was finished? Like, where would I put it?
Whatever you do, don't put a Disney canvas on the wall above it, and then that falls down and knocks that onto the floor.
That's the worst. My older son has like this huge like rocket ship. That he Saturn Apollo something on some huge ship that he built like by himself. It's like it was so expensive to buy. He wanted it for the holidays, and he worked on it so hard. And now it's just like sitting in his room, and I don't know what to do with it. Like, do I need to like build a shelving system? What do you do with these Legos when they're finished? These big Lego projects. It looks gorgeous where you have it. I don't have a spot in my house where I think I could put it.
Yeah, we need a bigger house now just because we've got a box of Lego that needs building and not enough place to put it.
I have heard some excuses in my time, Rebecca. That's probably the worst.
We need to buy a new house for the Lego.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not sure that
just
that
an
works.
Extension will do. Oh,
I think for me it's probably slightly different because I don't get to watch Here with the Magic because I'm at work when it's on usually, and I was working all through the pandemic. So for me it's probably the wax melts and candles that we have. So, and the t-shirts and the headbands and ears and all those little bits that I can wear when I'm not at work or when I am, even when I am at work. That just kind of keep it going.
Claire? I think that's why we're quite a diverse bunch when we do the podcast and the show, because I mean that's one of the things that we do to keep it going, and that's one of the reasons we all came together is because we were I've joked, this is my outlet so my family don't kill me from talking about Disney all the time. But I was lucky that as a teenager, we went to Florida on holiday a couple of times and also to Disneyland Paris. So and since then, I've racked up quite a number of trips, particularly to Disneyland Paris, because for us, it's only, 2.5 hours away from home. So and I've been really lucky in the last couple of years. I'm part of the Disneyland Paris UK Dream Team, which means that I get to advise people on their website in terms of trip planning and support people, guests who are looking for advice about Disneyland Paris. So I do that in my spare time, we all have lots of that. And that for me, the Disney stuff is just the outlet of expression and creativity that I have a work in healthcare and I go to work every day, and this is what I do in my time to keep me sane, I think, really. Mm-hmm. And I was that friend that would get messages from people saying, well, look, we're thinking of going to Walt Disney World, what would you say we should do, how do we fit it all into a 5-day trip, and how do we see everything? And I'm the person that writes that joke, that long text message, like, number one, you're not going to see it all, but this is what you could do. And so I started a blog where I was just basically brain dumping all of the information that I was rewriting every time someone asked me the same question. So I started putting some stuff down in writing and thoughts, and then sort of it moved into tips, and then two months ago, something like that, Ben suddenly pops up, it slides into my DMs and says, yeah, fancy doing a podcast. So I'm just like, this sounds amazing. So I think that for me, there's so many different facets to my excitement. I've got wax melts. I'm looking at the shelf because I've got like a tower of wax melts on the shelf next to me of different things. But I have the opportunity to talk to people all the time about it. Whenever I want, I can just log into a website and I can help people who are going on their first trip or who have been 100 times and just want to chat about the next thing that's coming. And then I can talk to these guys 100 times a week and through the WhatsApp group. And we just have this out constant churning that keeps me level. It keeps me and my friends at work, they joke, oh, you're talking Disney again. Well, actually, do you know what, these are the things that actually keep you balanced and the equilibrium in place so that I can continue to function. And for me, it's never about the rides, it's never about Mickey Mouse, it's never about going and hugging a character. It's about being in that space where I feel comfortable, where I feel able to disconnect from all the other stuff that's going on, and the freedom that offers me in my head and in my heart to be able to just enjoy being with my family. So that's kind of my Disney point.
Yeah, I definitely get that. I always say I laugh when you said it, because I always say the same thing when I say, like, I don't care about Mickey Mouse. Like, I enjoy a good roller coaster, but it's not that. It's like, it's the community and just the feel of it. Right. Like, I did my undergrad in New York City when I was going to college, and I remember being in high school, and I was we had taken a family trip to New York, and we arrived in the city, and I just kind of felt this wash come over me, all right, this is the energy of the city just gelled with me perfectly. I was like, this is my spot. And I ended up going to college there because it just felt right. And that the moment that I described on the boardwalk that night when we came back as a family, when everything, it was that same click, it was just that, the energy of the space, it was that whoosh came over me. And I was and that was why I started making the candles, because I didn't want Mickey Mouse on my candle, because that wasn't what it was about for me. It was just aesthetically, to me, my style is very kind of simple and kind of apothecary. And it's very sort of that style, and all the candles I was seeing on the market were primary colors, and it's just not what I was trying to bring into my house for the, anyway, I'm rambling, but just because what you said made me think the same way I think of it. I laughed when you said about Mickey Mouse, because I don't, and it's fine. As a symbol of it all, I think it's cool, but I don't need Mickey on my wall. It's not why I'm here. So I got it.
John?
I've got a bit of a different tale, because actually 2020 was going to be the first year that we deliberately planned to have a year off. And that was the first one since 2008. And we've been every year. And little did I know, and I keep getting the blame for it, you know, but it was, it was one of those where you take stock and you just sort of, you look at exactly what's going on. And actually, I was the person who would least likely to be like Disney. And yet, after all these years, having been sort of on a golf holiday and dragged basically into Magic Kingdom by my wife, just to say, look, this is what it is, and just connected instantly. And all that the past couple of years have actually afforded me is the chance to talk to people like yourself and to talk to so many other people who I would never, ever have had the conversation with. I know I've got a friend who I know listens to our show, who I think I've told the tale before, where both of us were stood in a pub in the middle of Manchester going to watch the football, and it's two blokes in a football pub talking Disney. And actually, I think I used the word emotional attachment that day, to which I still get grief of the overuse of the word emotional attachment, but that is exactly what it is. It's my happy place. It's my place which I've been fortunate enough to take my family to, and they share that happy place on the same level. And because we've not been able to go there, I've actually been able to be quite self-indulgent and spend a lot of time on a computer talking to people that I've never met. And it's wonderful. It's brilliant, because like Claire said, you know, you start talking to people in sort of normal day-to-day life, and they look at you and go, oh, yeah, you're talking Disney again. But it's sharing a passion, and to be able to share it with yourself, with the likes of Lou, with the likes of Jason and Colin and Carlos, and the list is endless. We've been so lucky as a podcast to actually be part of such a wider community, which when the parks were shut, really should have just been in complete mourning and in meltdown, and yet it hasn't. And I think we took a very early decision to take a very positive route about it, and to remain upbeat and to try and keep that positivity going for our listeners and for our viewers, but also for ourselves. We all need it. And I think, you know, the guys here have had so many trips cancelled, and I felt so badly for them. Because to have a trip to Walt Disney World cancelled is the most, it would break my heart.
Yeah.
And to have it done again and again and again is such a horrible experience. And we all live for that moment that we can step back in Magic Kingdom. And I think we've all said it before, that moment we all get to go back. You know, even saying it now, is I've got the hairs on my arms sticking up. It's just like, just looking up Main Street, it's just going to have a completely different meaning. And it's not about Mickey. It's about our happy place, and about a place that I think all of us, yourself included, you know, it's in the depths of our heart as to how much it means to us all.
Thank you. Just know, like, that those of us who are here don't take it for granted at all.
I know that for a fact, Lisa. And I think that's actually been one of the best things with people who are out there, have given us as a group, and certainly for everybody in the UK, we've actually taken so much because people have been able to get into the parks and to share the stories of how it has been. It's been a long journey, and to see how, you know, like you said before about when the parks shut, I think everybody was brokenhearted. But to be able to be so close has actually kept us in the loop in a way. And rather than thinking what on earth is happening, everybody there has understood that this community is just this. It's just done. It's actually become a much more closer knit community than I think we ever thought it was prior to all of this, all these crazy days actually happening.
Yeah, I think we've proven ourselves as a community through all of this. Yeah. And we've all kind of found like what our needs are and like what we can contribute, you know, as far as like building this community and like bringing Disney to people who can't be here right now, or bringing Disney to people when none of us could be here, just to bring the community together. You know, I like what Jason has done, has, you know, taken off like it has, because he just kind of dedicated himself to bringing you guys the parks. You know, of course, Jason and Colin and Carlos, and, you know, needless to say, Lou. I think anybody who's here right now is feeling more grateful than ever, because like not only do we get to be here, but like we're experiencing it all for the first time again in so long. Like, you know, as a local, the one drawback to being a local is that like it's not, you kind of, I mean, the trade-off is worth it, but you kind of lose that like, oh my God, I'm on vacation kind of feeling of being here and like walking in the park or like crossing through the gates for the first time. So we've all gotten that gift back lately, like of walking in seeing fireworks for the first time last night, or like walking back into Magic Kingdom after it had been closed, or, you know, there's such a long list of thing of firsts, restaurants reopening and resorts reopening and parks reopening. And like, it's just, it's been such a journey for all of us. And I think like those of us who are local have gotten to recapture that excitement, which has been really cool. And then like, obviously being more than happy to kind of share it out for people who can't be here yet. So it's been a journey. And I think like as a community, like we've grown and we've definitely like proven ourselves, you know, people's true colors have been shown. And like the people like you and Lou and Jason and Carlos and Colin, who are putting positivity out into the community, like, you know, you grab it like attracts like, and you know, the people who are meant to be together in this community, I think, are like, have all found each other, which has been really good.
I think there's something about the fact that there's enough Disney for all of us. It just needs to be shared in the right way. And there are some people who hold on to it as if it's their own. And then there are other people who share it out and spread that magic and joy. And I think, as you say, you gravitate to the people who share it. So I think we feel very privileged to be part of that community.
Likewise.
No, certainly do. Oh, that's just, I was sending shivers up my spine that bit there. Right, I'll tell you what. Do you want me to round the show off? Because actually, I'm just aware that we've taken so much of your time, Lisa, and I do really appreciate it.
It's my pleasure.
But I'm just looking. When you become aware that time's now, it's now 2 hours.
I know, it was daytime when we started, John. It is not now.
It's even not here either. So
no, I'm like, look.
Yeah, I started the show thing at 5 o'clock somewhere, and now it's 5 o'clock.
Yeah.
Oh dear, Lisa, it's been such a delight to share a waffle with you. In fact, I think we could just grab another cup of tea or a cup of anything else and just continue the chat for just another few hours. However, all good things do have to come to an end. So just for our listeners and our viewers, where can people find you online?
So like we talked about, my blog, which is kind of the heart of it all, is thecastlerun.com. And when you're on the blog, there's a shop tab, or you can go to coremorycandles.com to find the candles and browse around. And I'm always readily available if you have any questions at all about that stuff. If your preferred social media platform is Instagram, I'm very, very active there under the Castle Runner is my handle. Also, Core Memory Candles has its own handle on Instagram. And you can, of course, find me under my personal page on Facebook and the Castle Run page and the Castle Run community. So those are the places that I'm mostly active, but the blog is the heart of it.
And I would push anyone listening, go and have a look at that blog. It is absolutely immense. It really is. And there's loads in there. It's just, if you're online, you can just sort of dip in, dip out as and when you want. There's loads in it. It's brilliant. It's a real good example of a lot of hard work and a lot of dedication to just sort of putting it all out there, Lisa. So, yeah, hopefully we get loads of people clicking on.
I hope so. Thank you so much.
Ben, where can people find us?
Well, you can just go straight to our website, gbmickeywaffle.com, find all our links to everything we do on there, from our Wafflers Wednesday shows to all our podcasts and anything we get up to.
And what would that be? Come on, let's give everyone a guess. Wednesdays, every Wednesday, we're on YouTube and Facebook, waffling on about whatever we kind of think is all right for that week. So 8 p.m. UK time, and it is 3 p.m. Eastern time in the US. And then we've also got third Friday of every month, we are live. Wafflers Assemble, third Friday of every single month, for a monthly madness of a live show. We're faced once more with Mastermind Chair and the Roulette Wheel of Waffle, which is easier for me to say than anything else. Claire, anything else you want to add?
No, just we're active on social media, so you can find us at GB Mickey Waffle on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, and come and join us in the Waffler's Arms, which is our community page on Facebook. We are a very sociable bunch. We'd love to have you there. We have some unique sharing moments during the week. So if you're not a member of the Waffler's Arms, come and join us. Bring your own drinks, I'm afraid, but come and grab a chair in the garden and we'd love to see you there.
Lisa, it's been such a delight to share a waffle with you. It really has. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much. This was so much fun. The hours flew by.
Yeah, it certainly did. Always does. That's why we get a reputation for waffling on you. So, thanks, Claire. Thanks, Ben and Becca. That was just amazing. And also, thank you for actually listening. It's always appreciated. And until the next time, there's only one thing left to say. Waffle on.
Waffle on.
Waffle on. Waffle on.